Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, June 12, 2018. Let's begin with some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, "Tornadoes hit Champaign. Damage left in the wake. Sunday storm brought two brief, low-intensity funnels." This article is written by Ben Zigderman and is based out of Champaign. Despite two brief tornadoes hitting southwest Champaign on Sunday afternoon, the tornado sirens weren't activated. When the tornadoes struck just after 2:15 p.m., the head of the Champaign County Emergency Management Agency said he was unable to confirm the funnel clouds. "You can see rotation on radar, but we saw none. I called the National Weather Service, and they said no," John Dwyer, D-W-Y-E-R, said. "We had a spotter nearby, and they didn't see anything." The two tornadoes were rated EF0, the lowest rating on the Enhanced Fujitsu scale, and each lasted less than a minute, according to a preliminary report from the NWS, which sent a crew to the scene on Monday. "Even the experts couldn't confirm it till today," Dwyer said. Even if he had sounded the sirens for Champaign, Urbana, the University of Illinois, and Savoy, they might not have helped anyone, Dwyer said. "By the time the siren would have gone off, it was already over," Dwyer said. "And most of the sirens would have sounded at a time when they were not in the warning area." The tornado sirens suffer from some common misconceptions, perhaps the biggest being that the sirens sound whenever there's a tornado warning. "There's no sense setting them off if it's not in the immediate area," said Gary Crowley, C-R-O-W-L-E-Y, who controls the sirens in Mahomet. A thunderstorm watch was upgraded to a thunderstorm warning at 1:41 p.m. that urged people to take shelter. At 1:59 p.m., the NWS issued the tornado warning for northwestern Champaign County, indicating that a tornado could quickly develop. When the storm hit Mahomet, Crowley decided not to sound the sirens there. "It was nothing that we could actually confirm to set them off. There was no radar indication, and there was nothing that we spotted that indicated a tornado or funnel cloud," he said. "The tornado sirens are also only meant for people outside," Dwyer said. "They are outdoor warning sirens," he said. "The sirens are for people that are outdoors." And despite not sounding, people were apparently warned enough, as no one was hurt. People did receive prior warnings on their phone and their National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration weather radios, Dwyer said. "It's not that the system didn't warn them, it's just that one part, based on the situation, wasn't sounded." Dwyer said officials held a debriefing meeting Monday to discuss what happened and what could be done differently in the future, but he said the protocols worked. "I stand by the decision that was made," Dwyer said. Like a train coming. The warning system worked for Bob and Mary Elaine Hughes, who live in the 2200 block of Strand Drive, a couple blocks away from the worst of the damage. They were in their basements after receiving warnings on their phones, TV, and weather radio. "There's a potted plant I went out to get, and then all of a sudden the wind just came up really quickly, so we both ran into the house," said Mary Elaine Hughes. "All of a sudden it sounded like a train coming, and we just dashed to the basement," Bob Hughes said. He said the worst of it lasted less than a minute. "By the time we were in the basement, the sound went away. It was very, very fast," he said. "We peered out through the windows in the basement and realized there were tree parts that didn't belong where they ought to belong. Three pine trees in their backyard snapped in half. A neighbor's table was in their yard, and their neighbor's trampoline was mangled. Meanwhile, their grill and backyard furniture barely moved. That led Bob Hughes to think it may have been a tornado, not straight-line winds that caused the damage. Better the trees than us and the house," he said. Good clues say tornado. On Monday afternoon, NWS confirmed two tornadoes touched down after surveying the damage. On Copper Ridge Road, roofs were taken off houses, insulation was sucked out and splattered onto siding, siding was ripped off, pieces of wooden fences were driven into the sides of some houses, said Chuck Schaefer, S-C-H-A-F-F-E-R, an NWS meteorologist who looked at the damage Monday. "Those are all good clues it was tornado damage instead of straight-line winds." With winds of 75 to 80 miles per hour and a width of 30 yards, the first tornado briefly touched down in the backyard of a residence on Copper Ridge Road, the NWS determined. Eyewitnesses stated the tornado dissipated in about 30 seconds or less, about one-tenth of a mile to the east-southeast of where it formed. The storm then crossed Interstate 57, damaging trees in Zond, Z-A-H-N-D, Park, along the way. Then another brief tornado formed near Duncan Road and Rolling Acres Drive, the NWS report said. This tornado snapped off the tops of trees and did minor damage to two properties, the NWS report stated. Similar to the first tornado, this tornado dissipated in less than a minute, about one-tenth of a mile to the southeast of where it developed. City to pick up debris. On Copper Ridge Road, Mattoon-based Legacy Roofing and Restoration was helping repair roofs for free. I was down the road from the storm, saw the tornado, pulled right in, called our owner, Caleb, K-A-Y-L-E-B, Burritt, B-U-R-R-I-T-T, and said, I think we need to do something. They need help right now, Jeremy Janes, J-A-N-E-S, said. After getting the go-ahead, I called our crew, and within an hour and a half, we had 15 people there till 12:30 a.m., tarping houses and taking care of people. They returned Monday for 6 hours with chainsaws, helping to cut down trees and branches. They've still got a lot to do, but we made a lot of progress this morning, Jane said. Throughout the neighborhood, driveway basketball hoops were uprooted, trampolines were damaged, and at least one chimney was lying in a yard. Other debris had blown into the cornfield just to the south. The city of Champaign said it will be clearing up natural debris in the area until Monday, June 18th, if it's placed in yard waste bags or bundled with on-metallic twine and placed near the curb. For other types of debris, the city recommended homeowners talk with their insurance companies about companies and or solid waste hauler. We are all safe. The tornado narrowly missed the New Century Estates Mobile Home Park just down Windsor Road from the Copper Ridge subdivision. We had a lot of tree limbs come down, said James Snodgrass, the park manager. Some shingles fell off and some of the mobile home skirting blew away, he said. A lot of old trees came down in the front section, but there was no real serious damage, Snodgrass said. We were really lucky. Had it gone through here, it would have been devastating. The storm affected at least two golf courses in the area Monday, with the University of Illinois Orange Course closed and Legends shutting down its 9-hole course. We're closed today due to the wetness, but there was no damage, said Legends Greg Flesher, F-L-E-S-H-E-R. The rain made the grass even greener. Mattoon saw the most rain from 7 a.m. Sunday to 7 a.m. Monday, according to the NWS, with 6.12 inches. Danville had 3.15 inches, Tuscola 2.65, and Champaign 1.15 at Willard Airport. At Curtis Orchard, which is just south of where the second tornado hit, some apple trees were damaged. So far, there are around 15 trees that have been snapped off at the root, even with the metal pole supporting them, the orchard tweeted. We are all safe and will be ready in the fall. For farmers, the heavy rains should be fine and the corn is expected to bounce back from the wind damage, said Paul Burbaum, who farms just west of Champaign. We've got a little more rain than we need, but things look pretty good, he said. The corn is leaning a little, but that's not going to hurt it, so we're in good shape. It usually straightens up. Probably within a week, you won't even notice it. The next headline reads, Unit 4, Burnham owner has site picked, but school board isn't entirely convinced as move deadline looms. This article is written by Lindsay Jones and is based out of Champaign. Christopher Enck, E-N-C-K, didn't save Burnham Mansion in its proverbial 11th hour. In fact, that time had come and gone. The Winnetka preservationist, who bought the mansion from Unit 4 for $10 last month, with plans to relocate it, had missed two district-set deadlines to inform officials where it would go. But near the close of Monday night's school board meeting, the district's chief legal and financial officer, Tom Lockman, L-O-C-K-M-A-N, made an unplanned announcement. Enck had submitted paperwork proving he had secured a property for the mansion. He's encouraged me to share that location with the board tonight, Lockman said. As we understand it, it will be 501 West Church Street on the corner of Elm and Church. The move from 603 West Church would cover a short distance, but it represents the months-long efforts of hundreds of people to prevent the historic home from being demolished. Unit 4 had planned to demolish the 134-year-old building as it stood in the way of a voter-approved $87.1 million expansion and renovation of Central High School. In protest, the Preservation and Conservation Association and Friends of Burnham Mansion unsuccessfully attempted to buy the property from the district after the city council voted against their request to grant local landmark status to the home. It was Enck, E-N-C-K, again a University of Illinois architecture graduate, who proposed physically moving the mansion. After selling him the building last month, Unit 4 also pledged $50,000 for moving costs, money previously set aside for the mansion's demolition. But the two missed deadlines had embittered some board members by Monday evening. Deadlines have been missed. Extensions have been missed. I'm not seeing a good pattern here, Board Vice President Amy Armstrong said after Lockman's announcement. We answer to taxpayers. We can answer to students. I'm deeply concerned. Kathy Richards said the board had been generous in allowing Enck to miss the deadlines without consequence. It is so important to get out there that we as a board have been as accommodating as we have with granting extensions and allowing extensions to be missed, she said. This has all been to support the hard work our colleagues have put in to make this happen. Lockman told the board he felt confident Enck understood how strict the district's timeline is and how vital it is for the central referendum project to continue on schedule. I know he has an understanding of all of the different pieces of the puzzle, not only with central but with all of our projects, Lockman said. I know several people in town have been working with him on it. It is something we certainly intend to stay on top of. The contract between Enck and the district stipulates that he move Burnham Mansion by July 15th. Otherwise, he could be fined $2,500 per day by the district. I want to see this succeed, but if it isn't able to happen, I want it to be known that this district has been working to potentially make something like this happen, Board President Chris Klappel said. If these deadlines aren't met, we have steps in place. In some form or another, that building will be removed from that property. The proposed future home of the mansion, 501 West Church, has been barren since late 2016, when the former Fleetwood building was demolished. That building, which dated to the late 1950s, was home to the O'Byrne, Stanko, Kepley, and Jefferson law firm from 1959 until September of 2015. The firm sold the building when it moved to Huntington Towers, and a demolition permit was issued in 2016. At the time, there was talk of the lot possibly being used for condominiums or apartments, but nothing ever materialized. Multiple attempts by the News-Gazette to reach the new owner were unsuccessful. Now let's take a moment to look at our forecast for the next week. This is provided to us by Greg Soleil and his column on the weather front. So today it will be 85 degrees, mostly cloudy, with a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Overnight, mostly cloudy, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms in the evening. Wednesday, the high will be 86, the low will be 60 degrees, partly sunny in the morning, then clearing, northwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Thursday, the high will be 85, the low will be 64, it will be mostly sunny. Overnight, mostly cloudy, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Friday, the high is 88, the low will be 69, mostly cloudy, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Overnight, partly cloudy, then becoming mostly cloudy. And by Saturday, the high will be 90 degrees and the low will be 72 degrees. It will be partly cloudy. Heat index readings are predicted to be anywhere from 97 to 102 degrees. And now, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Jim Rosso. Only once in 65 years has the U of I Open been canceled. Bad greens to blame in 1962. Organizers of the popular golf tournament are confident that that total won't rise despite dozens of damaged trees making the Orange course unplayable on Monday. Sunday's intense storms took a toll on the tree-lined 18-hole layout in Savoy. I've never seen anything like it, said Mike Wallner, director of the U of I golf courses. But we're making progress as far as cleaning it up. It's just a glitch. Wallner hopes to open the Orange's front nine today, ahead of Saturday's first round of the U of I Open. We're going to be good to go, he said. The scene in Savoy is part of our gallery of storm photos that can be viewed at newsgazette.com. Online audience, what was trending last week at newsgazette.com, which in a seven-day period ending Sunday saw 1,286,605 page views. The three top stories were 1, storms batter Champaign subdivisions, 2, prosecutor says trucker used slingshot to shatter windows on I-74, and 3, Centennial grad crowned Miss Illinois 2018. The three top sports stories were 1, Ebo Boden. Ebogbodin, excuse me, that's Ebogbodin. Best for me to transfer. 2. News Gazette exclusive. Wolken, W-O-L-K-E-N, steps down at St. Joseph Ogden, and 3 United Center a game to feature Big Ten foe. The 3 top videos were 1. Arraignment of man charged in I-74 slingshot incidents, 2. Car motorcycle accident in West Champaign, and 3. Illini coaches, AD, play ball with special needs athletes. And the 3 top photo galleries were 1. Wisconsin trucker arraigned in I-74 window shatterings, 2. Illini quarterback club golf outing 2018, and 2. Xavian Daniels. Or that was 3. Xavian Daniels. In history, area history, in 1918, fire destroyed a large tenant house on a farm occupied by Charles Kellogg, 2 miles south of Savoy, after a coal oil stove exploded. In 1968, Champaign County Republicans nominated Larry Kramer, C-R-A-M-E-R, as their party's candidate for state's attorney, while county Democrats chose Lawrence Johnson as their candidate for the office in the primary election. In 2003, Greyhound considered adding a new stop at the Matrix Cyber Cafe in Rantoul. And in international history, today's highlight, on June 12, 1963, civil rights leader Medgar Evers, then 37, was shot and killed outside his home in Jackson, Mississippi. As a follow-up in 1994, Byron de la Beckwith was convicted of murdering Evers and sentenced to life in prison. He died in 2001. On this date, in 1939, the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum was dedicated in Cooperstown, New York. And in 1942, on this date, Anne Frank, a German-born Jewish girl living in Amsterdam, received a diary for her 13th birthday, less than a month before she and her family went into hiding from the Nazis. And as a quick follow-up to the Unit 4 article I read earlier, go figure. Unit 4 made transactions aplenty Monday. Here are a few. 74 cents. The quote for one slice of pizza, sausage or pepperoni pizza, one slice of cheese, sausage or pepperoni pizza, the district received from Papa John's. 14 cents cheaper than the rate in the Domino's bid. Jet's Pizza also bid to be the official pizza maker for the high schools, but did not meet the specifications for protein per slice, it was noted. Papa John's also had the higher taste panel score. 13. Years of Unit 4 Middle School Service by Jesse Guzman, who is being bumped up from associate principal to head principal at Jefferson. Guzman, who spent 9 years teaching 8th grade social studies at Edison, takes over on July 1st for Angie, that's A-N-G-I, Franklin, Unit 4's new director of teaching, learning, and student engagement. $513,603. What the district will pay the MTD for busing its students to and from school and 35 neighborhoods per the terms of the contract extension for 2018-19. Other terms of the agreement, the MTD will be required to provide transportation for 34 school trips, as well as 36 late starts and 4 early outs. The next headline reads, Champaign-Urbana Theater Company, who's top dog? Pair of canine naturals to share four-legged role in CUTC production of Annie. This article is written by Anthony Zilla, C-I-L-I-S, and is based out of Champaign. The decision between the 3 actors was quick after Monday's audition at the Virginia Theater. 2 actors showed they were well-controlled, they didn't make noise or distract from the stars of the show. Although they both wandered off stage aimlessly a few times during the audition, they calmed down quickly and didn't react adversely to cheering. Luckily, none of the 3 had an accident on stage, which can be a problem for actors who play the role of Sandy, the blonde, colored dog in the play Annie, which the Champaign-Urbana Theater Company will put on in August. We decided that rather than choose one, we'll choose 2 and see how they respond, producer Todd Salen, S-A-L-E-N, said just after the 3rd and final finalist left. Jody Varner, a local dog trainer, put 3 golden-colored dogs through the paces on Monday, allowing them to walk on stage without a leash as the 2 actors who will play Annie, Noreen Adani, that's A-D-O-N-I, and understudy Kellen, K-E-L-L-Y-N, Morber, M-O-R-B-E-R, called them, pet them, and gave commands. Nala, N-A-L-A, a curly-haired 5-year-old golden doodle who made the cut, calmly wandered around the stage before lying down next to the 2 actors. Parasol, a 2-year-old Labrador, and the other dog chosen bounded onto the stage but calmed down quickly despite a few backstage jaunts. They also reacted well to the dozen or so people in the seats who cheered loudly on cue. The big thing is, did they warm up after a short amount of time? Farner said. Were they able to settle down? Were they able to listen to the girls and take some direction? Or did they just stay amped up the whole time? There's a lot going on, so they have to be able to focus. The most important criteria for choosing dogs, other than their sandy color, was their ability to stay calm and listen under pressure. A lot of people will do community theater, and they'll have animals be a part of it, and as they do it, it's kind of a joke, like, ha ha ha, there's a little dog or there's a cat, Salen said. We wanted this to be a real experience, like a Broadway experience, where the dogs are trained, where they act and they do what they're supposed to do and everyone enjoys it. The dogs are very important to the show, but the kids are still the stars. Annie still got to sing Tomorrow and not have the dogs steal the show. That goal may be hopeless, co-director Stephen Fiol, F-I-O-L, knows, but if they're going to take the spotlight, they want them to do it for the right reasons. We just want them to be really cute, Fiol said, because dogs are going to steal the show. We all know that. But they will also make the show in a certain way. The next headline reads, Urbana City Council, plan to close Civic Center gets first okay. This article is written by Natalie Wickman and is based out of Urbana. The Urbana City Council on Monday gave its first approval to the upcoming fiscal year's proposed budget, which includes closing the Urbana Civic Center. Mayor Diane Marlin helped create the budget and said the closure, slated for December 31st, would help the city with cost-saving efforts as it faces financial uncertainty and shortfalls. Last night's unanimous vote came after the council tossed around ideas for keeping the center open instead. Several aldermen said their constituents contacted them to say that they would miss the center. When the matter was discussed last month, ideas included only opening the center on weekends, and granting naming rights if a private donor wants to renovate it. It operates at a loss of $40,000 to $50,000 per year and has structural damages, including a leaking roof. Since then, Marlin said she found that keeping the center open only on weekends would require about the same amount of employee pay for less work. Last night, Alderman Eric Jacobson suggested keeping the center open for another year and raising fees sharply to see how invested customers are in keeping it open. Some aldermen couldn't see that working. All of the arguments I heard were emotionally based, that people love the center and have great memories of it, Alderman Dean Hazen said. I can't imagine most people being able to pay more. Marlin told council members that they need to look at the long-term picture and not just next year. She said that there is a deficit of approximately $2.5 million in the city's general fund and that closing the center is only one possible way to fix it. The city is also working on fully funding its police and fire pensions and building up its financial reserves. For years, our expenses have been increasing faster than our revenues, and we haven't been addressing it, the mayor said. I truly can't recommend trying to keep this open. If it closes, Marlin said the Civic Center won't become an unattended, vacant building. The facilities manager's office would be moved there and that person would monitor it. In other business, the council also gave its first approval to allowing dockless bike sharing in town. All aldermen were in approval except for Hazen. The service allows people to rent bikes and park them in certain areas around town when finished instead of on specific docks that would need to be installed. Riders would be able to locate, unlock, and pay for bikes with a mobile app. The next headline is based out of Aurora. 7 wounded in shooting at party. This is written by the Associated Press. Police say 7 people were wounded in an apparent gang-related shooting at a child's birthday party in suburban Chicago. The shooting happened early Sunday in Aurora. Police say the shooters arrived on bike or on foot and fired multiple times before fleeing. At least one person shot back. Police spokesman Dan Farrelly calls it shocking and horrible. 6 people with gunshot wounds were found at the home. A 7th victim was taken to a hospital by a relative. All are expected to survive. The wounded range in age from 21 to 30. About a dozen children inside the home were not hurt. The next headline reads, Crime Data. Social Media Altering Gang Life. This article is written by Michael Tarm, T-A-R-M, and is based out of Chicago. LaMonta Reese lived much of his gang life in virtual reality, posting videos on YouTube of him and others taunting rivals. He died at age 19 in the real world, bleeding from his head onto a porch on Chicago's South Side after one of those gang rivals, prosecutors say, shot him 11 times. Another possible factor in his slaying, a smiley face emoji Reese posted that the suspected gunman may have interpreted as a slight about his mom. Gang's embrace of social media to goad foes or conceal drug dealing in emoji-laden text is the biggest change in how gangs operate compared with 10 years ago, according to new law enforcement data provided exclusively to the Associated Press ahead of its release Tuesday by the Chicago Crime Commission. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and other sites have radically altered gang culture in Chicago. They're having a similar influence on gangs nationwide. These days, there is nearly always a link between an outbreak of gang violence and something online, said Rodney Phillips, a gang conflict mediator working in the low-income Englewood neighborhood where Reese lived and died. When he learns simmering tensions have spilled into violence, he no longer goes first to the streets. I Google it, Phillips said. I look on YouTube and Facebook. Today, that's how you follow the trail of conflict. Asked what led to his son's death, Reese's father, William Reese, answered promptly, something on the internet. He said his son and Quentin, Man-Man, Gates, later charged with first-degree murder in the killing, had been trading barbs on Facebook. Updated gang maps, also being released in a Chicago Crime Commission gang book, chart the turf of 59 gangs, from Reese's Black Disciples to the lesser-known Crazy Get Down Boys. They illustrate how gangs have splintered into smaller, less disciplined factions, quicker to resort to violence. The last gang book, used as a guide by regional police, was published in 2012. Gangs put a premium on retaliation for perceived disrespect. In the past, insults rarely spread beyond the block. Now they're broadcast via social media to thousands in an instant. The next headline reads, Illinois Department of Natural Resources, State will reopen bidding for resort. This article is based out of Shelbyville and is written by Tim Dittman. The state will soon reopen the bidding to redevelop the shuttered Eagle Creek Resort on Lake Shelbyville. Illinois Department of Natural Resources spokesman Ed Cross on Monday revealed new details on the loan bid received from Sullivan Harbor based in Sullivan. The vendor failed to meet the minimum points in 4 of 6 categories to be considered responsive. The RFP will likely be put out to bid within the next couple weeks again, Cross said. Our folks have spoken to the vendor who submitted the proposal. It sounds like he was receptive to the information we shared. It's very possible we receive another bid from him in the future. A representative for Sullivan Harbor could not be reached for comment. Cross did not have a timeline for the second bidding period. He says Eagle Creek remains on our radar, quote unquote. The resort was built in the 1980s and closed in 2009. There have been several attempts to revitalize and reopen the resort since then. And today on WDWS 1400 AM, tune in for Morning Show with State Representative Jim Durkin. He checks in at 7:40 AM. Penny, Miss Illinois, Grace, let me spell out her name, Khachaturian, Khachaturian, visits at 9:10 AM. And their sports talk from 5 to 6 PM. Hear from U of I Hoops coach Brad Underwood. To chime in, you can call 217-356-9397. Or text 217-351-5357. And if you miss any of these broadcasts live, you can tune in for podcasts at a later time. Also on newsgazette.com, the morning show, C. Pius Weibel, Champaign County Board Chairman on filling the District 6 seat. Legally, I can pick anyone who is eligible from District 6. The law was changed a few years ago where I don't have to follow what the Central Committee presents to me, although it would be good if we worked together. For our entire menu of morning shows, visit our website and click on podcasts. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, June 12, 2018. We'll resume shortly with part two of the News Gazette, so stay with us. Thank you very much for listening, and have a wonderful day.